Hello there, and welcome to Short Science, your international, era-spanning portal for all the very best science in brief. I'm Elizabeth Hawke. Today, we are going to be looking at batteries. How do they work? And what are the differences between the different types? We'll also be taking a look inside the human body to see whether there is a human equivalent to the good old AA. Plus, we'll be answering some listener questions about the do's and don'ts of batteries. This is Short Science. So hello and welcome to the show. Welcome back to CASA Short Science, our new bespoke, nearly functioning studio. Now, things went a lot smoother last week, so I think we're getting the measure of how the new gizmos and gadgets pumping us out to the internet airwaves are actually working. And speaking of last week, we had a fantastic show on conservation. We were looking at just what conservation means, which animals are in need of help to prevent them from becoming extinct, and how traditional medical practices can further the plight of some animals. Now, we also looked at whether conservation really is a worthy cause, or whether it's contrary to evolution. We had a brilliant report from Connor Walsh about a conservation project in New Zealand. So if you missed out on the show last week, check out our website, shortscience.co.uk, for another chance to listen. Or you can download the episode as a podcast from iTunes. Just search for Short Science. Now, also last week, we mentioned that we will soon be joining Bungalow, a brand new online radio station, which is launching on Monday, the 28th of March, meaning that our first show on the station will be Wednesday, the 30th of March, at our new time of 8 p.m. Now, Bungalow is only just over a week away from launch, and it really is a very interesting enterprise indeed. So Bungalow will be broadcasting shows from all around the world, and even in some cases in different languages. Now, there'll be programmes for everyone from three-year-olds upwards, and hopefully there'll be a whole range of topics being covered. Now, the great thing about Bungalow is that absolutely anyone can record their own show and submit it via the Bungalow website for their chance at radio stardom. So if you've got a great idea for a radio show, and you own a computer or even just a tape recorder, you could be making your own show and sending it along to Bungalow for broadcast. Now, you don't need to have any experience whatsoever. You can be any age, speak any language, and be based in any part of any country. Now, the only rule is that you must not include any copyrighted material in your show. So that means absolutely no commercial music whatsoever. Otherwise, you won't be broadcast. And speaking of music, if you're a budding musician and you're not signed to a record label, you can submit your own original music to the Bungalow playlist to hear your sounds live on air. So for both music and shows, check out the Get On Air link on the Bungalow website, which is bungalowradio.com. Well, back to today's show now. We're going to be looking at batteries. What actually is a battery? What is it made of? And how does it work? What different types of batteries are there, and do our bodies run on a human equivalent? Now, before we crack on with today's news, let's turn the page to next week in the diary and see what we've got coming up on the show. So we'll be bringing you the latest on the nuclear situation in Japan. Now, there are still many conflicting reports about the risk to the population there, but hopefully by next week things will be a bit clearer. So we'll be looking at the damaging as well as beneficial effects of radiation on both the environment and the human body. Now, if you have anything to say about the situation in Japan or about the use of nuclear technology for power generation or indeed medical purposes, then please get in touch. If you call into our recording service and record your message over the phone, we will play you out on air during the show next week. So the number to dial is +44 7401 856 681. That's 07401 856 681. Or you can email any material thoughts or ideas to studio@shortscience.co.uk. Well, let's get cracking with today's show now by taking a look at what's been hitting the science headlines this week in the Short Science News in Brief. Japanese tsunami, a 1,000-year event. Scientists are saying that the massive tsunami following the earthquake in Japan last week bears similarities to a giant wave that hit that same piece of coastline in the year 869 AD. Japan has many earthquakes and many resulting tsunamis, but it's very rare for anything to happen on such a huge scale. However, in the year 869, there was a tsunami that moved 4 kilometres inland, causing widespread destruction and flooding. However, there's some conflict in the scientific community, with some scientists saying that you cannot read too much into historical events in terms of planning for the future with things like earthquakes and tsunamis. 1940s research gets the US in trouble. Guatemalans who were deliberately infected with syphilis or gonorrhea in the 1940s are now suing the US government. Many Guatemalan prisoners, psychiatric patients and orphans were infected in an effort to study the effects of penicillin on these diseases. Last year, the US apologised for conducting these experiments, although the current government has not offered any compensation to those affected. Now, these experiments had been kept secret until key documents were discovered by a historian who then made them public. Now, at the time of the test, the Guatemalan government had given permission to the US to conduct the experiments, but the individuals themselves were not informed of the nature of the tests. Older female elephants are the wisest. It's long been known that older female elephants are very important within their social groups, but researchers have now found that groups of elephants will look to the older females before reacting to potential threats. Elephants will take defensive action against male lions, but are not really threatened by female lions. So when researchers played male lion roars to groups of elephants, the oldest female elephants gathered the group into a defensive huddle. When female lion roars were played, the group did not respond at all. It also seems that the older female elephants are better at judging whether approaching elephants from other groups are trying to invade their own group or just be sociable. Malnutrition rife in the community. It has been revealed that as many as 1 in 3 people admitted to hospital in the UK are already at risk of developing malnutrition. It has been suggested that cuts to community care are leaving vulnerable individuals at risk of malnutrition. Cuts to care centres that provide hot meals and domiciliary services like Meals on Wheels mean that many people who are unable to cook for themselves will now go without hot meals. But council representatives are saying that stopping food provision is not linked to malnutrition. Beaked whales scared by Navy. A new study suggests that the beaked whale is particularly sensitive to unusual sounds in its environment, including naval sonar. Previously, the use of sonar has been linked to increased numbers of whales stranding. Now, scientists used naval listening devices to monitor beaked whales foraging deep in the ocean. They noted that when sonar devices were activated, the whales stopped their own vocalizations and slowly drifted to the surface before moving away and continuing to forage elsewhere. The whales were tagged and were found to move up to 16 kilometers away from the sonar before resuming their normal activities. Now, it's speculated that if there is a lot of sonar activity in the waters around the whale cannot move far enough away and may be confused by multiple sources of sonar, causing them to strand and die. Artificial blood manufacture attempted. Scientists in Scotland are attempting to manufacture blood that can be used in transfusions. They're attempting to grow blood cells from stem cells and believe that if this process could be carried out on an industrial scale, it would end the current supply problems. It would also lead to greater compatibility between the transfused blood and the recipient. Now, although the technique has been perfected in the laboratory, it's another matter altogether to carry this out on a large scale, and scientists are urging people to continue donating blood in the usual way in the meantime. Volunteers, vital to science. Scientists have been highlighting the importance of data provided by volunteers in maintaining studies of scientific variables over long periods of time. Many long-term surveys would simply be too costly to carry out otherwise. Now, among projects that rely on trained volunteers to collect data are many ecological surveys. Some scientists don't believe that data collected by non-scientists should be included in scientific studies because of the risk of errors, but others believe that as long as appropriate training is provided and the data collection is monitored and properly examined, it's perfectly valid. Many long-term studies would cease to exist without the assistance of volunteers. And finally today, bone marrow transplant centres across Europe have been put on standby in case they're needed to treat victims of radiation in Japan. Now, this is a protocol that was put in place following the 9/11 terror attacks. Treating people who have been exposed to radiation is quite similar to treating people with leukemia. They're more vulnerable to infection and may need blood replacement therapy or even bone marrow transplant. At the moment, it's unclear whether these services will be called upon by the Japanese government. Well, that's it for our science news today. If you've got any comments or questions about any of our stories, give us a call on 07401 856 681 or drop us an email to studio@shortscience.co.uk. Well, it's time now for our first capsule of the day, so let's take an introductory look at the battery. So, what actually is a battery? Well, an electrical battery is made up of one or more electrochemical cells that convert stored energy into electrical energy. So a 1.5 volt AAA battery is just one single cell. But in a 9 volt battery, there will be six of these 1.5 volt cells all lined up together. Now, the first battery was invented in 1800 by Alessandro Volta. And since then, the battery has become almost ubiquitous, with worldwide battery industry generating $48 billion in sales each year, with a growth of around 6% every year. So are there different types of battery? Well, yes, there are. There are primary batteries, which are used once and then thrown away, also known as disposable batteries. And then there are secondary batteries, which are rechargeable and can be used many times. And batteries also come in all shapes and sizes to power something as small as a wristwatch, or something as big as a hospital or computer data centre in an emergency. So let's go back to the year 1800. How did Volta discover the battery back then? Well, Volta's work was inspired by the work of an anatomist and physiologist called Luigi Galvani. Now, Galvani was dissecting frog's legs and had noticed that you could make a frog's leg twitch by applying a small electrical spark to it. And he later found that he could make the leg twitch by attaching two different metals to the frog's leg in a circuit. Now, when Volta saw this, he realised that the frog's tissue could be replaced with cardboard soaked in salt water. And he could measure the voltage being created not by seeing the frog's leg twitch, but instead by measuring the electrical charge directly. Now, this system was called a galvanic cell. However, Volta didn't really understand the principles at work in his electrochemical cell, and it wasn't until the work of Michael Faraday in 1834 that it was really understood that the cell wasn't an inexhaustible source of electrical current, and that it was the movement of charged ions within the cell that created that current. So we've mentioned a couple of technical terms there. So what do charged ions have to do with producing electricity? Well, as we've said, a battery is made up of electrochemical cells. And within each of these cells are two half cells that are connected by a conductive strip that allows the transfer of ions from one half of the cell to the other. So one half cell contains electrolyte and the electrode to which the negatively charged anions will migrate towards. And the other half contains the same electrolyte and the electrode to which the positively charged cations will be attracted. So what is meant by electrolyte? Well, an electrolyte is a substance that contains free ions that make the substance conduct electricity. So these ions must be both positively and negatively charged. Now, an electrolyte can be a solid or a liquid. So let's take the example of sodium chloride. Now, this is made up of positively charged sodium ions and negatively charged chloride ions. Now, ions have a charge because they either have extra electrons, making them negatively charged, or they have too few electrons, making them positively charged. And during the operation of the battery, something happens called a redux operation. Now, this means that the cathode, one of the electrodes, is producing extra electrons, and the anode, the other electrode, is actually taking up electrons. So the negatively charged ions move towards the anode and give up their extra electrons, while the positively charged cations move towards the cathode and gain electrons. Now, this can only happen until all the electrons have been redistributed and the situation becomes stable. Now, this is why a primary or disposable battery runs out of power. Once all the reactants in this reaction are used up, there is no more chemical potential to be converted into electrical power. However, in a rechargeable battery, the reaction can be reversed so that it can take place all over again and produce more electricity. So let's take a quick look at the common types of battery that we use. Now, the typical AA disposable battery is an alkaline battery, and this runs on a reaction taking place between zinc and manganese dioxide. Now, these batteries are more powerful than rechargeable batteries. They have a higher energy density, and they're therefore better for particularly energy-hungry devices. So what about rechargeable batteries? Well, the oldest form of rechargeable battery is the lead-acid battery. Now, this contains liquid in an unsealed container, and it's very, very heavy indeed. And it's really only used for one purpose anymore, and that is the car battery. Now, the more common type of rechargeable battery is called the dry cell battery, and that's what you'd expect to find in your mobile phone or laptop. Now, these tend to use substances like nickel cadmium, nickel zinc, nickel metal hydride, but the most common nowadays is the lithium ion battery. So in a dry cell battery, the electrolyte is a paste rather than being a sloppy old liquid. So that means that the battery can operate in any position and won't spill in vigorous movements. So that was quite a complex but fairly comprehensive look at the battery. But is there any such thing operating within the human body? Well, there are many complex processes within the human body that create and store energy for us. But what about within the individual cell? Well, the powerhouse of the cell is said to be a tiny structure called a mitochondrion. So is it just humans that have these mitochondria? Well, no, most living creatures have mitochondria that carry out a whole range of important functions within each cell. Now, one of those being the generation of chemical energy. So how many mitochondria are found in each cell? Well, it really varies. Some organisms that are just made up of one cell have just one mitochondrion within that single cell. But more complex creatures have more mitochondria. So within the human body, different types of cells have different numbers of mitochondria. For example, human liver cells, which are very active cells within the body, contain about 1,000 to 2,000 mitochondria each. And the mitochondria actually make up about a fifth of the cell volume. So what do mitochondria have to do with energy? Well, mitochondria are responsible for producing something called ATP, or adenosine triphosphate, and this is the main energy source for cells in the body. It's produced through a complex cycle of reactions called the citric acid cycle, or the Krebs cycle. Now, the inside of the cell, called the cytosol, actually does something called cellular respiration. Now, it's a bit like breathing in that it uses oxygen, but it's nothing like the kind of breathing we do in the lungs. So what happens in the cytosol is that in the presence of oxygen, substances like glucose, pyruvate, and NADH, a major source of energy, are produced. And the mitochondria takes these products and then converts them into the energy-rich ATP. So what if there's no oxygen around? Well, in that case, the cytosol does the best that it can and produces different products of respiration, and these cannot be converted by the mitochondria into the more energy-dense chemicals. So what else does the mitochondrion do apart from making energy? Well, it's very important in metabolism in general. That's the breakdown and creation of different substances within the body that affect energy levels. So mitochondria are important for regulating the cell membrane potential, helping to control what substances can enter and leave the individual cell. They are also involved in programmed cell death, which is important to make sure that cells die at the right time, not too soon damaging the body, but not too late, allowing things like cancerous growths to develop. And on a related note, they also control cell reproduction. They're involved in calcium signalling and also steroid synthesis. Some functions of the mitochondria depend on the type of cell. So a mitochondrion in a liver cell might perform functions such as detoxification that other mitochondria in other cells don't do. Now, there are some rare diseases that affect the mitochondria, and they're passed down genetically. But mitochondria are not inherited according to normal genetic rules. So both the egg and the sperm contain mitochondria. But when they fuse, the male mitochondria from the sperm are automatically marked for destruction, and it's the mitochondria from the egg that provide the genetic information for the developing fetus. This means that all mitochondrial DNA, all the genetic instructions for creating mitochondria, are maternally inherited. So this means that diseases affecting the mitochondria are always passed on through the mother. So the mitochondrion is the battery of each individual cell, converting chemicals into energy for the survival of the cell. Let's move on now to consider some of your questions about batteries.
You've got mail.
Okay, so our first question this week comes from John in London. So he's asked, if you have an old battery just sitting around in a drawer, does it lose its charge if you haven't ever used it? Well, the answer to that one is yes. A disposable battery, even if kept in the original packaging, will lose about 10% of its charge every year. Now, this rate of loss may be even higher in non-optimal conditions. This is known as self-discharge, and it occurs due to non-current producing side reactions that happen within batteries all the time. Now, these side reactions can be reduced by keeping the battery at a low temperature, but you have to be careful as batteries can be damaged by very low temperatures, and certainly you should never freeze a battery. Both extremes of temperature, high and low, are known to impair battery function. Which brings us on nicely to the next question, which has come from Mary in Suffolk. Are batteries affected by the weather? Well, as we've just discovered, batteries kept at cooler temperatures will self-discharge less, and so lose less charge over time when not in use. However, this also means that at cooler temperatures, batteries will discharge less well when in use as well. So the performance of your battery will be decreased in cold conditions. Equally, if you leave your mobile phone in the car on a hot day, that will also greatly affect the battery life. So our next question comes from Sarah in Basingstoke, and she wanted to know, what's the fastest charging battery in the world? Well, the fastest battery is the lithium iron phosphate battery. It's the fastest charging and also the fastest discharging battery in the world. Now, we all know about using lithium ion batteries in our laptops and mobile phones, but these batteries were also used in China to power its fleet of electric buses for the Olympics. Now, David, somewhere in the UK, wanted to know what the biggest battery in the world is used for. Well, I had a bit of trouble with this question. I can tell you that the biggest battery is in Fairbanks, Alaska, and is made up of nickel-cadmium cells, but for the life of me, I couldn't find out what it's actually used for. So if anyone knows what the biggest battery in the world is being used for, send us an email and share it, because we just could not find out. The address is studio@shortscience.co.uk. So let's move on to another question. Don sent in a great question, actually. He wants to know why rechargeable batteries don't last as long as disposable batteries. Well, the answer to that is that rechargeable batteries self-discharge much more rapidly than disposables. So particularly with nickel-based batteries, they can lose 10% of their charge, not within the first year like disposables, but within the first 24 hours of being charged. And after that, they then lose a further 10% of their charge per month. But lithium batteries are a bit better than this, so it's not all bad news with rechargeables. Now, Joe has sent in a question asking whether rechargeable batteries need charging before their first use. And based on the answer to the previous question, the answer is yes, because even if your battery has left the factory fully charged, it's not going to get you fully charged if it's going to lose 10% within the first day. So especially with a nickel-based battery, you really do need to make sure you charge it fully before using it. So what about recharging batteries then? Do they wear out? Well, each recharging cycle causes some deterioration of the battery. So a nickel metal hydride battery can only be recharged about 500 times, whereas a nickel cadmium battery can withstand about 1,000 charges. And recharging your battery with a super fast charger does more damage than recharging it slowly with an overnight charger. However, if your charger doesn't have an intelligent cutoff to stop charging when the battery is full, then overcharging will occur, and this is also damaging to the battery. So if you're going to leave a battery charging overnight, make sure you've got a charger that will turn it off once the battery is full. So do batteries need to be fully discharged before you recharge them? So we do need to run them right out. Well, nickel-cadmium batteries in particular do need to be discharged fully before recharging, because otherwise what happens is crystals build up on the electrodes within the battery, and that decreases the active surface of the electrode, which means that it can't be recharged quite as much the next time. And that is called the memory effect, a decrease in battery capacity that occurs over time. But the same thing doesn't occur with lithium batteries. So if you've got a lithium battery, you don't need to discharge it fully before you recharge it. So finally, Diane has asked about laptop charging. Do you need to fully run down the battery before recharging the laptop? Well, as laptops work on lithium ion batteries, they can be recharged at any point in their discharge cycle. So you don't need to run out the laptop fully before plugging it in. But they do have a finite number of charges. But with a lithium battery, that's not the number of times you recharge the battery. It's the total number of discharges. So say you use your laptop and use half the charge one day, you recharge it overnight, and then the next day you use half the charge again and then recharge it overnight. Both of those uses and recharges would only count as one total cycle, as you discharged it half each time. Now, lithium-ion batteries do need to be used to maintain their condition, though. So this means that if you always use your laptop plugged in, the battery won't last as long. So it's recommended to completely discharge your battery at least once a month to keep the condition of the battery, you know, nice and functioning. So you don't need to use the laptop until it runs out, but you need to have used it enough times without being plugged in that all of those uses will add up to one complete cycle. So you also need to protect your laptop from extremes of temperature. Temperatures over 35 degrees can permanently damage the battery. So never leave your laptop in the car boot, for example. Low temperatures can impair the battery, but the effect's only temporary, and the battery should pick up when back to normal operating temperatures. Now, if you're not going to be using your laptop for a period of months, you should leave it about half charged. So this will prevent loss of battery capacity, which might happen if you leave the battery fully charged, but it will also prevent it losing all of its charge, which can sometimes make it much more difficult to recharge. Well, I think that's all the battery questions that we've got time to answer this week. So let's move on now to our quiz. So again, this week, I'm setting the quiz questions and you need to be thinking of the answers. So here we go with question number one. What type of battery is used in an electric car? Is it A, a lead acid battery, B, a nickel based battery, or C, a lithium based battery? So what type of battery is used in an electric car? A lead acid battery, a nickel based battery, or a lithium-based battery? Well, we know that a lead-acid battery is the typical car battery that we all have in our petrol or diesel cars. Nickel-based batteries are the not-quite-so-good rechargeable batteries, and lithium-based batteries are the more modern, quite well-functioning battery. We know they've been used in China. So what do you think the answer is? What type of battery is used in an electric car? Well, the answer is, generally, a lithium-based battery. They are quick to recharge, and they last a greater number of cycles before they deteriorate as a battery. So the lithium-based battery is used in electric cars. So question number two. Thunder Sky is a company based in Hong Kong that makes what type of battery-operated marine vehicle? Is it A, a submarine, B, a jet ski, or C, a cruise ship? So the question is, Thunder Sky is a company based in Hong Kong that makes what type of battery-operated marine vehicle? Is it A, a submarine, B, a jet ski, or C, a cruise ship? Now, Thunder Sky also makes fleets of buses and cars, but what marine vehicle? A submarine, a jet ski, or a cruise ship? I can kind of imagine a whole bank of jet skis all plugged in, recharging, and you just hop on one and scoot off around some nice sunny bay somewhere. But the answer is actually A, a submarine. So Thunder Sky makes battery-powered submarines. So finally, question number three. Which city was the first in the world to operate a commercial all-electric bus service? Was it A, Tokyo, B, Seoul, or C, Sydney? So which city was the first in the world to operate a commercial all-electric bus service? Was it A, Tokyo, B, Seoul, or C, Sydney? So have a little think about that. Technologically advanced all-electric bus service, Tokyo, Seoul, or Sydney? Well, the answer is B, Seoul. Well, I don't know if any other cities around the world have followed suit, but Seoul certainly stakes the claim as being the first city in the world to operate a commercial all-electric bus service. Now, if you have any questions about anything we've been talking about today or would like to send in your comments or thoughts, then leave a message on our recording service at 07401 856 681 or email us studio@shortscience.co.uk. Well, that's about all we've got time for today. Don't forget to call in with your thoughts about Japan and radiation. Again, the number 07401 856 681 or email us on studio@shortscience.co.uk. Well, don't forget to check out our website for details of every show, including what's coming up next week. You can find out how to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or listen online to any episode you should so choose. So the address for the website is shortscience.co.uk. And that address for the new radio station, Bungalow, is bungalowradio.com. Well, thank you very much for listening. This has been Short Science. My name is Elizabeth Hawke, and I was your presenter and producer today. Thanks to James F. for his brilliant quiz jingle. The theme tune was written and produced by Don Gould of Music by Design. Thank you very much for listening, and join us again next week for another episode of Short Science.
Music, video, photo, literature, associations, visual arts, interview, news, your radio is Radiofonica.
Passanti, amo la pubblicità che con gusto digerisce, che vanferie e tradisce. Amo i segni dell'età ed amo ogni peccato, ogni modo esagerato, l'incompatibilità. Amo sapere che ho sbagliato, ma non mi sento in colpa se credo alle favole in cui lei molla al principe e si innamora del cavallo. Odio l'amore, già scritto e imparato, quanti amanti da Cinecittà. Amo il tuo odore, ti conosco da un'ora e ti amo. Ti amo già. Amo l'impulsività e chi non dà del lei, nemmeno il direttore. Amo l'estate dentro ai tram, quelle ascelle evidenziate ricordano il tuo odore. Amo chi ha la dignità di dire no all'amore rosso, alla rima con il cuore. Io credo alle favole in cui lei molla il principe e si innamora del cavallo. Odio l'amore, già scritto e imparato, quanti amanti da Cinecittà. Amo il tuo odore, ti conosco da un'ora e ti amo. Ti amo già. Odio l'amore, già scritto e imparato, quanti amanti da Cinecittà. Amo il tuo odore, li conosco da un'ora e ti amo. Ti amo già. Ti amo già. shoulders on of the night. Love the way the light is filtering through. I hold by the half-word sunlight. Lie on the bed you hate to love. Let your body roll right onto my side. Time has come to recognize that it's alright, so alright. Yes, it's alright for me. And it's alright, so fosse invecchiò con le mie ragioni e mi consola che nessuno in questo secolo ami qualcuno.
La migliore musica italiana in esclusiva.
Gli artisti emergenti più interessanti.
I live più adrenalinici.
La black music di Piotta.
Il music book di Dario Salvatori.
La musica al femminile di Note Rosa.
Videogames, animazione, cultura moderna.
Tutto questo e molto altro è Ubix, il miglior free press di musica e cultura in circolazione. Da gennaio Ubix arriva in Umbria. Cercalo ogni mese sul web e nelle migliori location della regione.
www.ubixweb.com.
Ubix.
Free press, free spirit, free music.